Thanks, Mark.
Absolutely.
I can always tell when Vina writes something. No, it's... Well, it's like, you know, the whole thing says, I've been around for a bit. I've been a real estate investor for 20 years. You know, I started off purely as a landlord, and out of that, I started growing at other things. Because back when I started, the short sales were big, and when you made offers to banks, you had to wait months upon months to get yeses. And actually, coming to RIA here was how I did a first wholesale deal, was because the bank said yes to three properties. I only had enough cash for two. I hadn't quite figured out the lending money side of things yet. It was go to the bank, get a loan, and, well, they wouldn't lend on this piece of crap property that I was buying on a short sale. And so I accidentally wholesaled that to a friend of mine, so I learned how to wholesale. Then I actually found out someone told me we could deliberately rehab properties and sell them for a retail profit. And both of those things I learned by coming to the RIA here. And out of that, so now I'm up to, I don't know, nowhere near Vina, but 250, 275 house deals where I bought it and either wholesaled it, rehabbed it, kept it as a rental, sold it retail, or whatever it is. So if there's a mistake to make in the house and getting the rehab done, yeah, I've probably done them all at least once, some twice, a couple, three times before it finally sunk in that you shouldn't do that, dummy. And that's important coming in as a lender now, because as I've transitioned from being out there and doing my own trash out demos and herding contractors, which is like herding cats, I've shifted more to the finance side. But I bring all that experience of being out there and fixing those houses, seeing those problems, dealing with those contractors. And so we're just not here as a lender for you. We're here to actually help you all the way through the process, help you succeed, so that if you're out there and you run into problems in your rehab, you can call and ask questions, and we're going to help guide you through that. If you're experienced and you just need to close fast, that's easy because you're experienced. Boom, we talk, we get it, bam, 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 done. So we can do a typical hard money loan in about 5 days. Okay, title's got to be clear. You got to have property insurance. And honestly, those two things are the ones that take the longest, except for the borrower. You know, it's like, it seems like some people just want to wait forever. It's like, no, send me three bank statements and a tax return. It's not this hard. Okay, send them now. Don't wait till the day before closing. You're going to slow things up. So send me these things. And we ask for these things for a reason. And sometimes those reasons are not always obvious to you. A lot of things I ask for based on my experience, things I've seen go wrong with my own investing. What things caused me problems when I was out there rehabbing? What resources didn't I have? What got in my way? So when I'm out there asking as a lender for these various things and it doesn't make sense, you can ask me why, but there's always a reason for it because I know what screwed me up as I was going along the way. Okay? I'm assuming that makes sense to you, right? Title work. So depending on your title company, title companies either hire out the title abstracting to third parties, and if they do that, a typical title might take two weeks or a little longer. Other title companies have an in-house abstractor or an abstractor on call where they go direct to the guy who's going to check title. So they can get it done sometimes depending on their workload within a couple of days. And if you bring them really good bottles of wine, you can get them in a couple hours. As long as they're not, you know, as long as there's no title issues that have to be resolved. Because if there's title issues that have to be resolved, now it could take quite a while they go through and work through those issues that are out there. We did one in Cincinnati that there was an estate that didn't get done properly. There was a second estate that needed to be done because the second person who was inheriting that estate also passed away without an estate, and that person had 32 heirs. That one took about 2.5 months to get through, and two title companies who refused to attempt to do it. So it can get to be a mess, and you know, part of what my job is to make sure that these things come out the other side clean so there's not an issue. It's amazing how many people I see that just bought a house from a friend or someone they met on a quick claim deed. They went down to the sheriff's sale and recorded it. And lo and behold, oh, there's a $50,000 mortgage. There's $20,000 in back taxes. There's this workman's comp lien from over here. And by the way, when you took that house, they came with the house. Welcome. You got extra presents. So everything we're doing is here, it's designed for two parts. One, it's to protect you and set you up so you're able to succeed. It's also to protect me as a lender so that I get paid back. That's what we're looking for. So look, we actually have slides. So there's a disclaimer. I'm just a real estate investor who happens to lend money. Okay, I'm not an attorney, I'm not an accountant, I'm not a licensed professional, anything. Everything I'm telling you is merely my opinion. Okay, so if I tell you something that sounds like accounting advice, go talk to Scott. Okay, he's an accountant. All right, I am not an attorney. Chicago Title actually brought attorneys out there. It's kind of nice. Second thing, I kind of hit the who we are, why it matters. So that's the first part. The thing is, why do we approve deals? We're going to get into that. I approve deals because I think I have a responsible adult who's borrowing the money, that they're going to succeed in the project, and that they're going to pay us back. If you can get over those three hurdles, you're good to go. There's a few technical things that go in there. And why do we turn down deals? Well, I'm sorry to say, your deal sucks. Okay, that deal, the numbers don't work. It's broken. Okay, it needs too much work. You're paying $50,000 for it. It needs $80,000 in work, and it's only worth $120,000. Unless you're buying it because you're going to move in your mother to live next door to you, as an investment, that doesn't make sense. Okay? I've actually funded that other deal, by the way. They had to put a lot more down to bring the ratios in line. They ended up that they paid cash for the house. I just funded the rehab. And then when they refied it, they moved mom in so they could be next door to her. So for them, they overpaid for a house because of the proximity to them and for their specific need. So as a lender, I can adjust my numbers and like your down payment in this case in order to make it fit what you need, as long as we can go through and make sure that this makes sense. Okay? And we turn down deals, like I said, because the numbers don't work. We turn down deals because, oh, you lied to me. Yep, you're done. As soon as you lie to me, it's over. And there's a few other things in there I'll hit in here too. Let's see, did I cover all this already? So we only lend to real estate investors. If you're doing your personal residence, I can't touch that. That's a licensed activity. I'm in Dan's way. We do other creative deals with investors. So we'll do some, if you've done deals with me before, so you're no longer someone that's new to me, like Torrance, for example. I've known Torrance for a decade or so, something like that. I might do an extra creative deal with Torrance that I might not do with you yet because I don't know you yet. But that comes with getting to know. There's a standard process we go through. So we've got five people on our team. So I've told you, I've got 20 years experience. I'm not the most experienced guy on the team. Okay? Back somewhere, there's Joe. Joe, stand up briefly. Joe's got like 40 years experience. Okay, he's a real estate investor, he works with me, you know, he does some loans out there, but he's also one of those guys that we get to call when there's an issue. It's like, maybe Joe knows that answer. So we can call him. Or sometimes we use Joe to connect you to a contractor down in his area when the contractor you had flaked out. So we're the team is out there to help you. We've got Joyce and Rod, who have been in title and mortgage for their entire lives. I'm not going to tell you how old they are, but it's been decades. Then we have Kelsey coming in. She's been with us for 2 years now, but she spent 4 years working with a home inspection company. Now, she was back in the office, but she saw a crap ton of things that are wrong in houses and why they're wrong. So she's out there looking at pictures and helping go through this. And all of this, bringing all this experience together, again, it's out there to help you succeed. We want to make sure it's done right. We're going to make sure it works. So we got that. We're here to help you get those deals done. The other thing you get to do is we'll sit down with people one-on-one and talk about where you are in real estate, where your investing career is, where you want to go, and we can help you map out how to get there. whether it's from some of the paths that I took to get where I got, or how to use various types of financing, hard money financing with BRRRRs and regular bank financing, and how to use that to accelerate your investing to get more deals done faster if that's what you're trying to do. So there's no one right answer on how to do a deal or how to invest. So when you hear, especially some people out there, like, well, you keep telling me there's three ways to do this. Well, that's actually, there's like 12 ways to do this, but there's three that are relevant to what you've told me so far. And you, as investors, you get to choose which ones are relevant to you and which way you want to go. So the path I took may not be the path you need to take, but you need to know what the paths are out there and what's available. So the great thing is, for sitting down and doing like the strategic sessions and stuff like that, we don't charge you for that. You're already one of our customers. We just help you. That's what we do. Okay? And like Mark said, I've seen so many screwed ups, and I've been involved in most of them. And we've seen plenty of them that other people have done. It's pretty rare nowadays to come up with something that we haven't seen already and fixed. Every now and then I get a surprise, like the person who we were just talking to. They bought a house and part of the house was held up by a carjack. That's all right. I haven't seen the carjack before, but I know how to fix it. The carjack was new. I did buy one that was held up by pots and pans on one corner. Seriously, pots and pans. I didn't think an aluminum pan could hold that much. So things out there. Like I said, if the deal sucks, we're going to tell you. The good thing is, after I tell you the deal sucks as it is, I'm going to look for ways, can we make it better? Can we make this deal work? Is there some path that this becomes better? Sometimes it's, you just got to tell the seller, I know you told me to give them 70, but based on the scope of work, you can only give them 50. If they want 70, they should take payments, $350 a month for the next 200 months, and they can get their 70 that way. Someone said yes to that, by the way. And sometimes you just have to walk away from a deal. We had one of the guys that we were running through the numbers with him, and there were septic issues, there were well issues, there was all kinds of issues going on, and he just looked at it as like, you know what, I don't want to deal with this. If there's $1,000 earnest money, that guy can have it, I'm out of here. And he's out looking for a better deal now. You know, and it always amazes me how many times I tell someone no, that this deal doesn't work for some reason, how they're calling me back in 2 or 3 weeks saying, all right, I found a deal that should work. So it kind of tells me that, okay, I'm doing something right that's helping people. Okay, so as you're kind of getting the feel for now, because I've been an investor, I'm just not that banker I'm wearing a suit, but I don't normally wear a suit. I only wear it for this event. What was I saying again? Oh, yeah. So I'm that second look. We're that second set of eyes on your deal. We're looking at it and saying, okay, did you miss something? Do these numbers line up? Does this deal make sense? So now you've got a second person looking at the deal and looking for those things. Now, for you experienced guys, that's not as big a deal. Okay? You kind of know what you're into already. But if you're newer, that can be a really big help. So, there you go. So remember, as a lender, I want to lend money. So I'm looking for reasons, for you guys to give me reasons to say yes. Help me say yes. Bring me good deals. Bring me your background. Bring me some skin in the game. Help me to say yes. Because if you come to me and I work with you and we end up saying no, I don't make anything out of that. Okay? And unfortunately, the people who work with me actually like paychecks. Now, if I could get them to work for free, if you know a trick for that, please let me know. I could take that little bit of help. All right, so we do hard money loans, private money loans, depends on what you want to call it. Basically, I'm a private money lender with standards. Okay? And one of the big differences for us is we're using our own money to fund your deal. I am the underwriter. There's not some weird dude back in the office with the green shades over his head looking at your numbers and saying yes or no. I'm the guy. If anyone says no, it's me. If anyone says yes, it's me. If you want to argue about it, you've got my phone number. By the way, I always win. We'll do transactional funding for you. So if you're doing a double closing, we do transactional funding. The only trick to that is it's got to be at the same title company, okay? You can't do it at two different title companies. I keep getting newbies trying to do this. A double closing when you're wholesaling a deal must be at the same title company. Now, the good thing is when I'm doing the transactional funding, I also can fund the end deal. So if you're buying from a wholesaler, I can fund that at closing just as fast as you can close with cash. And I've been beating wholesalers over the head with this, so they're starting to get it. Okay? So when you see a wholesale deal posted out there that says cash only, you say, yeah, I'm going to use Dayton Capital, but they're as fast as cash. And a lot of the wholesalers now, especially the bigger ones, they know this because I've closed deals for them and done, you know, put it together. So they know that works. And like I'd mentioned earlier, using Torrance for an example, I do crazy investor deals, things that make sense. But those are primarily with people that I already know, we have a relationship, we've done deals together, things like that. If we haven't done a deal together and I don't know you well, it just has to be stupid good. Then I'll take a chance. So these are the things that are important. First off is the deal. The deal's got to work. If the deal doesn't work, there's no point in going any further. The second thing, and I haven't hit on this yet, is you've got to have some skin in the game. This no money down doesn't work with me. Now, skin in the game doesn't always mean cash. I'll take equity in other properties. Oh, you've got this free and clear rental property? Great, we'll put that up instead of a cash down payment and press on. Piece of cake. Oh, you got a rental property, it's only 30% loan to value, and you got a 2.875% interest rate. Yeah, we ain't screwing that up. We'll just put ours in second position. You know, let's go. So you've got to bring some skin in the game. I had one guy offer to park his Lamborghini in my garage for 3 months because he needed money fast. I said, that's fine, just leave the insurance on it and give me the keys. Okay? That deal did not go through, unfortunately. Took all the fun out of it. I'm going to look at your experience. So, and it doesn't mean I won't do it because you're new, but if you're brand new, I'm not going to let you jack up a house, rebuild a new foundation, set the house down, and redo the entire structure. Unless you grew up doing that, which I did the loan for that guy because he actually sent me pictures of him walking with a house down the road, holding up electrical wires while it was being hauled down the road by a tractor to be set on a new foundation. So I was like, all right, you've done this before, okay. And your family does it as business. Yeah, we'll help you out with that. I'm going to look at your cash reserves. I want to know, if there's a hiccup, do you have extra cash to cover it? If your painter comes up and say, I've been done for 10 minutes, why haven't you paid me yet? Because you all know contractors like that. You've got to be able to have cash to cover it. You have monthly interest payments to cover. You have to cover utilities. There's grass to cut. You've all these things to do. So I want to look at it, make sure that you've got the resources to do that. Okay, it doesn't do you any good for me to take the last dollar at a closing and you can't make your first month's payment. Okay? Now, on the other hand, if you're selling a house that's closing in 2 weeks and that's bringing you flush with cash, but you're going to be low now, I might think about it and I might do some finagling to say, all right, well, tell you what, just in case that doesn't close, we'll write an extra mortgage in a note, and if that doesn't close, I'll just record that when you need the cash, because it's going to happen, and then we'll go from there. So there's ways to work around things. We're pretty creative from that perspective. Morning, Colleen.
Good morning. See, it's bad when your lender knows you're going.
Uh-huh. Sorry, Gay's right behind you.
I know. We're rooming together.
Oh, are you? I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah.
Good people. Now everybody knows who you are.
Yeah, he's like, good morning, Colleen. I just never knows you by first name, man.
The other thing we look at is your credit. Now, I'm not worried about having perfect credit, okay? We know there's bumps and bruises. Things happen. The unexpected comes through. But if I look at your credit report and you've never paid anybody on time in your life, I don't expect you're going to start with me. Okay, but if I look at it, oh look, there was a 30 day late on your Home Depot credit card because you forgot to send the check, or it's like, yeah, whatever, we've all done that. Okay, that's not a big deal. Okay, so I'm looking for something reasonable. And if you notice, I didn't say anything about your score. generally I'm not looking at your score, because I've got guys that regularly come to me over and over again, and their score bounces from about 610 to 720, depending on how many of their Home Depot, Menards, Lowe's credit cards they've maxed out this month doing their rehab. Okay? But when I look at their credit report, even though it says like 610, 615, 618, which a lot of lenders would deny, perfect payment history, all the way back, all the way down. And they tell me, it's like, yeah, I did the 6 months savings cash. When I sell this house that I'm working on right now, I'm paying it back off again. Perfect. I used to do the same thing. I get it. No worry. Gotta love the caffeine. All right, so if you're looking at rentals and Airbnbs and you're coming to me for the hard money loan on that, I actually give you a little extra work. So I won't do the long-term funding on those. I don't do that. But we can help you run through those cash flow numbers to make sure it's going to make sense. Looking at your overhead. Looking at, okay, if your credit score, if you did max out your Menards and Lowe's and Home Depot cards and your credit score is 615, we know when you go for your long-term refi, those have to be paid off to pop your credit score back up, so when you go to the bank and that long-term lender, you can get that loan. So I'm gonna start looking at that, making sure, okay, are you set up? Are we able to do that? When we do the hard money loan for this one and you sell this one, does this pay down your credit cards so you can get the next loan to get this one done? So that's kind of the level we work at working for you. I wanna make sure we can set you all the way up to the end. It's just not about closing a loan today. It's about getting your investing advancing so that you can succeed all the way to the other end. Okay? Let's see. And the rest of that I think we kind of hit. So when you're looking at your longer-term loans, one thing to watch out for is, depending on who your long-term lender is, on your Airbnbs and sometimes new rentals, they won't always count that income right away. So you're going to need to be shopping lenders right out the gate if you don't have one already that's going to support what you're doing. It's especially notorious for banks doing Fannie Freddie loans that if you're buying your first rental property or refinancing your first rental property, they won't count that rental income because you don't have a rental history. And I've also seen them, even though you've got a dozen properties, they don't want to count the new one because, well, that one's new. That's why I don't like underwriters. Okay? No common sense. So because I used to do these, and obviously I've done rental loans because I've borrowed the money, we're going to help you through that too in order to make sure that what we're doing today helps you 7-8 months down the road when you're doing that refi so that you can succeed there too. Okay, the reasons why I've told people no, okay, flat out, like I said earlier, is if someone lies to me, you're done. I've got no patience for that. I was in the military for 20 years. That's just not something you do. I don't care if you have a skeleton in the closet. Parade it out front and tell me all about it. You know, maybe we'll share stories. Maybe I've done the same thing. Okay? But don't tell me everything's perfect when it's not. Okay? Like I said, you've got to have skin in the game, except for some of those weird, crazy real estate investor deals that I do occasionally. Okay? Like I said, the deal's got to work. The deal, if it doesn't work, the deal doesn't work. We talked about not paying people back. And the one that really, really annoyed me last time was the new investor who'd watched a couple of YouTube videos and went to someone's weekend seminar was then telling me how I should act and approve him as a lender. Let's just say that didn't go well and he didn't get any money. So the ones I've turned down are, like I said, the new guy, in this case it was a guy, who saw no experience, never done a deal, watched some YouTube videos, went to weekend seminar, now knows everything, and I know nothing. And I don't take that as an insult to my ego. I take that as, you're not coachable. I don't want to deal with you. Because as soon as you run into a problem, you're not going to listen. And interestingly enough, I had one guy who I would never have done a loan with based on our initial conversation because he was young, dumb, and already knew everything. And a few months later, he came back and says, all right, I was an idiot. I didn't know everything. I'll listen now. That wasn't you.
No, but it was my son. Which is okay because now he's coachable.
Right, but now he's coachable. Now I've done loans for him. And honestly, he listens really well now. It's fantastic. And mom beats on him every now and then too. He fights back, so it's kind of amusing. But he transitioned from being uncoachable to coachable. Once he became coachable, then he was lendable.
And now he's doing fantastic.
Oh, he's doing great. And once again, if you lie to me, you're done. So a couple examples of that. I had one guy came up and told me how over the last year and a half he'd done 100 wholesale deals. And his tax return showed me that his Schedule C made $9,000 over the past year. And I said, where do those wholesale deals go? Well, you shouldn't be looking at that. Well, hey, this bank statement that is in a company name that's not yours that you say that says $100,000 in there, who owns it? Well, you shouldn't be looking at that. You should just see it and lend me the money. Yeah, needless to say, he didn't get a loan either. Okay? Another one was a broker. Called me up, and I work with mortgage brokers, okay, and I know they're calling me as a last resort because they're going to work in with, you know, Lima Ones and Chiaves and all that, those other companies like that. But when I started, I pulled the application in, got my stuff from them, looked at it, says, all right, send me a copy of the appraisal you have. We don't have one. Send me a copy of the appraisal we have. We don't have one. Send me the copy of the appraisal you have. We don't have one. Why do you need it? Yeah, that didn't go well either. So I already knew they had an appraisal. Now, I'd already done my assessment on the property. It was under contract for too much. So I didn't need the appraisal to do the valuation. I already did my own. But knowing it was out there, it was a good second check on me. Say, okay, they paid for an appraisal. Well, let's see what they came up with and see how that compares with me. Maybe I missed something. I finally got the appraisal from them, and it was about $2,000 off of what mine was. So we were right there in the same ballpark. However, because she lied to me about not having the appraisal, I ended up saying no. Had they just told me they had the appraisal and passed it on to me, I would have done the deal. They would have had to either bring their contract price down, or they would have had to put a lot more money down to bring the ratios in line, but it was doable. They screwed it up. Okay? And there's also what we call the lies of omission. Okay? Oh, yeah, everything's good. Oh, what about these 17 judgments for $150,000 on unpaid taxes that I just found? Oh, well, they're not on the house. They will be as soon as the house goes in your name. So that ended up not going well because some of them were also in his LLC name, and even though we could have created a new LLC and get around it, I just decided I didn't want to deal with them, honestly. There's the Dodger. Oh yeah, everything. Yeah, I'm a partner. I'm the JV. I'm running everything, and I've got my partner over here. He's going to sign on to the finance, and we're 50-50. But I don't want to be on any of the paperwork. Okay, well, why not? It's all his entity. I'm just helping him. I'm just the project manager, but I don't want to be in the paperwork. Well, why not? If you're highly, heavily involved, I'm going to do a background check. Oh, it's fine. There's nothing out there. You sure there's nothing out there? Oh, what about this federal conviction for fraud against the Veterans Association?
Oh,
that.
Is that real?
Yes. And sadly, his partner still has him as a partner and actually reached out to me again for a loan. He's like, no, you're still with Knucklehead. He's still lying. I don't want to deal with him. And by the way, you're a slumlord. You're not fixing up your properties. They look like crap. And I don't want those back if something goes wrong. You know, but he's also not coachable yet because he's in some other real estate program that's teaching him how to be slumlords. And I don't do slumlording. Okay, it's just not my thing. Other ones that have come up is and you'll see it a lot of times, especially if you get one of those little like 3-hour courses about fake it till you make it. Horrible idea. I'm much more receptive if you come up and tell me, hey, I don't know how to do this, or how do I get through this? What do I need to do? Versus just trying to act like a big shot and, you know, get through and kind of fake it. Just don't do it. Okay? They told me to do that when I get started, and I couldn't do it. It just wasn't natural for me. So I look for that. I want honesty, integrity, all those things that we enjoy. Okay, skin in the game. I think we kind of hammered on that. The basic thing is, if you don't have anything in the deal, what do you have to lose? Okay, because if you have nothing in the deal, I have 100% of the risk. So I want that borrower, you, whoever it is, they've got to have skin in the game. Okay, something. Equity, cash, a Ferrari, you know, we're flexible. I got the diamond right here. It is. It's in my pocket here. It bought for halves and wants for the trade. Okay, so we hit that. I need to update these slides. They're kind of repetitive. Oh, yeah. And sometimes I just don't like the deal for whatever reason. I turned down one on a gas station just because, frankly, I just didn't want to deal with the EPA issues that could be out there. You know, it's like, I just don't want to do that. You know, other ones that look like when I look at the deal and they want to keep it long term, and I'm not confident they can get refied. Maybe there's a credit issue or, you know, other things that happen, like cash flow is not going to be there. I know like mixed use properties are pretty hard to get financed at a bank, especially ones like you have commercial on the first floor, residential up top. And so things like that, okay, you got mixed use, great. Go find me the bank that's going to do the refi for you, that will do the refi on this mixed use property. And all of a sudden they find out how hard it is to find a lender that does those. And the lender that does those typically is at a lower LTV, and they're looking, they have higher expectations for the borrower. Because that's why you see so many downtown buildings where sometimes the commercial's full, but no one's living upstairs. That style of living has changed.
Do you have a concern of those particular long-term lenders changing their standards and the amount of time so they keep that as well?
Oh, easily. I was just talking to a guy out there yesterday. The commercial lender that he's been using for years, he went back in for another loan and said, nope, can't do any more right now, done. Just turned it off. And so remember, your banks, your credit unions, they're heavily regulated by the federal government. So the federal government, if they look at their investment portfolio of rental properties and personal mortgages and cars and say they're out of balance, they can just tell them, yeah, you can't do any more of those right now. We think you're out of whack. So it's not, sometimes it's not just the banker. You can't blame them. Sometimes it's the feds telling them you can't do that anymore. The other thing to look at too when we're talking about the feds is everyone knows, you know, long-term rentals, Fannie, Freddie are your big buyers for your 30-year mortgages. Expect to see more and more of those become 12-month seasoning instead of the 6 months you've been enjoying. Okay, that transition is going to happen as everything changes. It was 12 months when I started, you know, 20 years ago. Then it went down to six. And it's been six for a long time. Now as the economy is changing, you're going to see it start changing to 12. Some banks have already done that.
Will that force hard money lenders to extend their term?
I do mine for 12 months already because of that. And if you're doing a refi, you automatically get an extra month just to make sure that you have time. And we don't charge for that extra month. So seasoning. So a couple things, Seth, right, because you don't have a mic. On the seasoning side, we set our loans at 12 months because we know that that trend is coming. So we're already giving you 12 months. We automatically give you one extra month at no cost because sometimes they won't close until that 12 months is up. Okay? So we're going to give you that extra time if we want you to succeed. The seasoning for that starts from the day you sign the deed, unless you get a knucklehead underwriter that says it's when the deed is recorded, which has happened. No, the deed was signed on April 1st. It was recorded on May 5th. You start from April 1st. No, it was May 5th. Stupid people. So, it's things like that. Yeah?
Do you guys have a list of long-term lenders that you say they're good to go to and know you should stay?
Yeah, we maintain a short list of longer-term lenders, of people we know can do the things you need. So there's a couple of local banks and credit unions that do good commercial loans, a couple of good mortgage brokers that can do your DSCR loans and other more traditional type of loans. People we know that can get the job done. Now, if you've got a weird profile like one guy sent over there does, it makes their job harder. Okay? But in this guy's case, no matter where he went, it was going to be hard. Okay? So the various types of people we have actually loaned to. Convicted felon. Who's convicted for murder when he was 19, served 5 years. Had been out for a few years. Built up a track record. When he called me on the phone within the first 2 minutes, he told me the story. As he put it, he was young and stupid and hanging around with the wrong crowd. Guess what? He was a great borrower. He's actually got a whole bunch of private lenders that work with him. He had tapped them out. It's the only reason he came to me. He hasn't come back, though. So I don't know if he found more private lenders or not. But no, he's doing well. He was getting write-ups in the newspaper about, you know, making good and all that other stuff. So, but the thing I liked about him was, one, he had some experience. He had some real estate deals under his belt. But he was upfront about what the skeleton in the closet was. Hey, here's this problem. Okay? So that told me that he learned something. Either that or he was a really good scammer. But in this case, it was because he had learned. Okay? So he put it right out there. The same thing. Guy had been convicted of theft. Young, dumb, stupid. Did his time, came out, and got back onto doing things right. You know, younger kids hanging out with the wrong crowd. Okay, but they learn. Same thing with the drug dealer. Small-time drug dealer. But he got busted. So, but the thing they have in common is they all did their time, learned the lesson, came to me, and they were upfront about what the issue was. Hey, here it is. I was young. I was stupid. I did this. It's been 10 years. I've had no problems. Look what I've done since then. Okay, I can work with that. One of my tenants until very recently was a convicted felon. The same thing. He was up front. I mean, he was in the house for like 8 years. Okay? The only reason he moved is he got divorced, separated. What else is there? I have my glasses on. Oh, horrible credit. I loaned to a guy that had a 450 credit score for various reasons. He had perfect credit up to a certain point. Then it went boom. There was a divorce involved in there. There was a foreclosure. There was a bankruptcy. On the other hand, instead of doing 25% down, he did half down. So he had lots of skin in the game. And I think he paid that sucker off in about 3.5 months. It was quick. Bankruptcies, not foreclosures. Again, I don't try to penalize people for a one-time event. What happened? What caused this? Are you beyond it? Have you fixed that problem? So where are you going forward? Yeah, you had the bump on the road. How are we going forward? Okay, so that's what we're looking at. Yes, Steve?
Well, bankruptcies, you have a time limit to file Chapter 7. And they're under 7 years. You know, you got after 7 years, they can do it again.
They can. So that's where looking at what brought them up to that and what they've done since then matters. So if they're in bankruptcy, I want to make sure it's if it's Chapter 7, I want to make sure it's discharged. Okay? So that's one of the things I look for. If it looks like the only people I've had problems with that in have been tenants, honestly. I've had some tenants who looked like, oh, look, you're 52 and you've filed bankruptcy 3 times.
Bankruptcies?
Nah.
Divorces are common bankruptcy.
Yeah. Divorce, foreclosure. One of my best tenants ever was going through divorce, losing the house to foreclosure because they bought it based on 2 incomes, and because the bank had already told them they were going to file the judgment lien afterwards for the deficiency, filed bankruptcy to make sure, because he just wanted to put that past him. He was a fantastic tenant. I let him move in. He wasn't even discharged yet. There was other thing. He had the same employer for 12, so he was a GS-12. He'd been there for 19 years. Civilian. I knew where he worked. I also knew where he worked. And it's like one of those things, like, okay, he had a one-time event. He's still working through it. His income, which is out there that's supportable, it supports this rental property, and I know where he works. 4 or 5 years later, he bought the house from me. He was going to live there for a year, kind of get his life back together, and, you know, look for a better place to live in. But after moving in, he kind of liked it, and he stayed there, and then he got a girlfriend, and she moved in. And it's like, hey, can we take this wallpaper down in the living room and repaint it? Sure, go right ahead. Hey, the water heater went out over the weekend. We put a new one in. My friend's a plumber. He helped me. He was over here. But we didn't get a chance to finish the overflow, which goes into the wall in this particular house. Can you come over and help me do that? Well, you already paid for the water heater. You already installed the water heater. Yeah, I'll come over and bring my blowtorch and some copper. We will get that done. Hey, can we put a new dishwasher in? Sure. You want the old one? No. So, fantastic guy. So when he bought the house, I actually set it up so that we bumped the price up a little bit. I paid for all his closing costs so I could net where I wanted to be. So he was able to buy the house for almost no money out of his pocket. Because we also set up so we closed down the third, so he has 4 months' rent available. Plus, well, I had to give him a security deposit back. So he went to closing with like a few hundred bucks, even though it was a 5% down loan. So again, we're trying to help people. Let's see. So I did, when I first started off as a private lender, before I kind of got into the business of private lending. So there's a very distinct point where that changed. I loaned to some people that had little to no skin in the game because they seemed like nice people. One turned out to be a pothead with big dreams. This guy just quit when it got hard. Okay? So I did, I don't know, 6 or 7 where they had, you know, $0 to a few thousand in the deal. One of those went right. The other 5 or 6, I ended up, they went wrong. I had to take properties back, and it was just ugly. So there's a reason why we want people to have skin in the game, because we know there's an incentive for success there. Yes? So I'm looking for someone that when they buy the property, they're going to have at least 25% down on that purchase price. So if you're buying it for $100, Rod, can you grab those flyers, pass those out to people? Basic specs are there. Don't get distracted reading the flyers, though. So I'm looking for people who have 25% of the purchase price down. Now, I'm in Dayton. You can buy houses for $20,000. So if you're buying something for less than $60,000, they got to have at least $15,000 down. There's your skin in the game. And pay for closing costs. Now, that can be cash, that can be equity, or a Ferrari. But it gives people that incentive that if it does get hard, hey, I got to work through this because I have this money at risk. Okay? So there's that. Other things we look at is, does this project match up with your experience level? Okay? Does the scope of work match up with your stated exit strategy? If you're telling me you're going to sell this property retail and you're in a $500,000 neighborhood, you're not putting in laminate countertops. Okay? So I want to make sure that all these things line up because that's going to help you to succeed. Okay? Those things have to line up. If you're telling me you're going to refi this and keep it as a rental, it's a $400,000 house that rents for $2,000. I'm like, okay, how are you making up the difference? Oh, well, it's going to be a short-term rental. Oh, did you know that city just said you can't do that anymore? What? So there's things like that. Like I said, everything we're doing is to help you succeed in there. The core questions that I'm always looking for is always first, is the deal good enough to fund? Does the deal, as it's laid out, does it make sense? And then as the borrower, are you good enough to fund? Are you going to pay me back? Okay? That's it. Those are the two questions I am always looking to get answered. And so I've got this little gut feel that, you know, flutters around every now and then. And the gut is never allowed to say yes. Okay? It's only allowed to say no. And every time I have violated that, I have been wrong. So we no longer violate that. But yeah, when it starts fluttering, I start digging, and I usually find what's causing it. That's how I found out about the appraisal, for example. So when we do an application online, our application is entirely online. We do an application. It's pretty simple. It's like, tell us about you. If you have an entity, tell us about your entity, you know, operating agreement, things like that. And then tell me about the deal. Okay? Then some additional questions that I got to do for, you know, just to get everything documented. It's pretty straightforward. Everything on there is there for a reason. If somebody is, you know, proficient with downloading bank statements and PDFs, most people knock it out in about 30 minutes. The only thing we have on our application that's different from a lot of others is we ask you to give me a good set of photos of the property as it sits today, which is harder with a sheriff's sale. Because I can, when we're doing our valuation, in order to save you money, we can do it entirely in-house. Okay, so we're trying not to send a third-party appraiser out there. So if I get those photos back, I can tell a crap ton of things, because remember, I've rehabbed all those houses. I can go through a set of photos and give a very good estimate what it's going to cost to get that project done. The only thing I can't see in photos is sloping floors. That's hard to detect. I can if it's really bad, I can see it because door frames are cockeyed and crooked and things like that. And sometimes, even though I get a good set of pictures, I'm going to look at it and go, yeah, I'm going walking through that one. And we're going to go walk through it because there's something that is off or it's not right. Or sometimes if it's a new bar, I just walk through it with you and talk it through. Did you see this? How are you doing this? Have you planned for this? What are you going to do if you open this wall up and you find this? Because I see signs that it might be like that. Have you allowed for that in your budget? So little things, like when you look at an old house and there's crinkled wallpaper along the top, that usually means they're settling. And if the foundation's not settling, frequently means there's termites in the wall. And they've eaten enough of the wall that it's dropped a little bit. Guess how I found that one out?
Ouch.
Yeah, that was fun. So Ed said, everything we do is with a purpose. So we want to lend on deals. That's how we're making our money. Yeah, I still have a rental portfolio. We occasionally wholesale a deal. But my focus is here, being the private lender and helping you guys succeed. That's really where my focus is nowadays. So all I ask is be honest with me. You know, work with me. Help me help you. And there's some things that, when do you want to use me as a hard money lender? Okay? I'm not the person you're going to call for a five-year loan. I'm too expensive for that, all right? It's hard money for a reason. You want to call me for a couple of things. You're getting a killer good deal if you can sign the purchase agreement this weekend and you can close by next Friday, because we can do that. Okay, your bank can't do that. So that's where you need. You're going to use me because, hey, I want to take this property, and this one's for you. I want to buy this property. I want to get it fixed. So I can fund because I fund all the rehab. So it's 25% down on the purchase. I fund 75% of the purchase. I fund 100% of the rehab, as long as it turns out to be less than 70% of the LTV when you're done. So you hit me up for the purchase money, get the rehab money from me, get the project done, get it rented, and now go to the bank with a really nice, pretty property that has a tenant in it, and get a refi based on its new after-repaired value. Decide how much money you want to take out of it, whether it's 80, 75, 70, or 65%, based on what payment you want. Recycle your money back into your checking account, and then go do it again. So it's a way to accelerate your investing is by recycling that money through. Now you're into the deal with less money out of pocket. Because if you bought it at the bank and you put 20% down on a rental property, and then you funded $25,000 for a rehab, for a light rehab, now you're 20% down plus 25 grand out of pocket. That really slows down your investing. Okay? You pay for hard money, it costs a little more. But now you get through there, I funded the purchase, most of it, I funded the rehab, and now you go refi at 75% loan to value, and now maybe you only have 5 or 10K left in the project instead of 40 or 45. That allows you to do more deals faster. Okay.
Okay, sorry. When you go to the bank for the traditional loan after you've dealt, does all that you've done show up on the credit report?
No. So we're too small to report to credit. So what the bank will do is they'll ask me if they want it. They're going to ask me for a form called a verification of mortgage, which is what I sign and give to them that says, yes, they made all their payments on time, or no, they didn't. So they're going to ask me to validate that. The other thing that can help you when you're going for that refi and after you've done the work is have good before pictures, good after pictures, and a good invoice from your contractor invoice that says, hey, yeah, we bought this inexpensively. We did this work to it to make it better, and now it's worth this. If it makes sense to the banker and they're not a knucklehead, they'll lend on that. Now, some banks will tell you you have to wait for the seasoning period. So right now, that seasoning period is either typically 6 or 12 months is most common. 6 is still the most common. Some will do 3. And if you have a really, really good one, they have no seasoning. They understand that you can go out there, fix the property, and make it worth more, and waiting a couple extra months doesn't make a difference. So in the Dayton area, we have a credit union that has no seasoning period on refis, as long as it makes sense. Okay, so needless to say, if you have properties in the Dayton area, we often send you over there because they're smart like that. And the banker there is also there to help you out. So we work hand in hand with him so that I'm doing deals that he can fund and get you moving on your investing. All right, that was the main part of the presentation. What time is it?
9:30.
I took 10 minutes longer than usual. That means you guys got about 30 minutes to ask me every question you can think of, except for Glenn. He's not allowed to ask anything. And, you know, what can I do to help you out? Oh, a basic thing. So on the loan side, I said I mentioned 25% down on the purchase. I charge you for $100,000 loan. I'm going to charge you exactly $4,130. Okay, 100 grand and up, it's 4 points, $130. Here's the advantage of that. You have no appraisal to pay for. You have no other stupid fees to pay for. There's no, that 4 points plus $130 covers everything. There's no other origination fee, documentation fee, LLC review fee, you sneezed while talking to me on the phone fee, we had to pull your credit report fee. We don't have any of those other fees. We also don't ask for a whole lot of unnecessary title insurance endorsements. Okay, basic lender's title is all we need, unless I see something that causes me to say, yeah, we better have this. And I see a lot of lenders out there that have, oh, by the way, you're paying another extra $800 for endorsements for things that are never going to happen, like oil and gas mineral rights on a house in a subdivision. Okay, I've seen lenders that require that. Okay, and that's just an extra $400 that you shouldn't have to pay. Other things we do to help you out, because remember, I'm an investor. I put this together as something I would want to use. Okay, other things. Our mortgage is short. It's like 5 pages. There's one lender out there, their mortgage is so long that the title company threatened to charge them for paper. 286 pages or something like that was all the paperwork. And like 80 some pages was the mortgage that had to be recorded. Remember, recording is $8 a page. Okay, so I'm doing a lot of things because as a lender I can protect myself, but I can also keep those costs lower because you don't have to pay for those things because they're really not helping you. Yes, Steve?
On insurance.
You're close to Glenn, I'm not sure.
On insurance, if you're going to have somebody borrow or require to hold insurance to protect the property while he's doing.
Yes, must have property insurance at closing.
But if he has a piece of property that has to be over a period of 12 months in a high crime area, so now there's more theft. So that's loss. Insurance will not cover that. If it burns down, they're covered.
It depends on the type of policy you have.
Right. So is that something that if you're in a D neighborhood, crime late, or problems with the longevity of rehab, are you going to ask the borrower to come up with other endorsements at 115, 120?
So I actually, so what Steve's asking about in neighborhoods where, especially where materials tend to walk when you're not watching them, is what type of insurance? So when you get your standard property policy, it covers fire, liability, things like that. You can get endorsements on there to cover theft. If you're doing a lot of rehabs, you should get a business policy that actually has that inclusion in there. And those are things that I talk about, especially with new investors. If you're in that D neighborhood where things tend to walk, you don't leave your tools there while you go to lunch. And as one of my contractors found out, you don't leave the trailer door open while you're carrying things inside, because in the 5 minutes he was inside, there was a guy in the back of his trailer rifling through it. Okay? So those are conversations we have with people. And even in an A neighborhood, things can walk. So those are things you want to make sure. You keep them secured. If you put materials in there, you put it in the garage, you close the door, make sure it's not visible. You don't leave expensive tools sitting around or sitting in the front yard. You actually look at your contractors, and I mean, how many of you background check your contractors? See? That's one thing you should do. Your contractors, you're hiring, you're trusting into your property with your materials, and how many thugs do they have working for them? How many judgments are already out there against this company or this person? So I've had contracts come, I can't believe this guy, you know, he took all my money and he disappeared. Oh, did you look up the 17 judgments he has against for him in the county? And by the way, didn't we tell you not to use him? Well, he was the cheapest price. Well, look what you got.
As a lender, then you are going to require endorsements on properties that you deem in the neighborhood that are bad enough that as a borrower, you're going to tell me, Steve, you got to do it.
So I've told a couple people that. Most people, after we have the conversation, they simply do it because it's a smart thing to do.
Okay.
Or they arrange not to leave materials behind. However, the fun part is when you get your appliance packages in, you get all the appliances installed, and you come back the next day and there's no appliances there. So then the debate is it the neighbor who saw you load them or is it the contractor who installed them for you? Last time it was one of my contractor's guys. I let him resolve it with his guy. But I had a new set of appliances in a couple days in there that didn't cost me anything. And I never did see the guy again. I'm assuming it just means he wasn't working for him. Well, that contractor also happened to be a felon with, so, but he was upfront about it.
Probably a little more stringent on when somebody breaks his trust.
He was trying to give somebody a chance, and it backfired on him. So he just said, it's taken care of, your appliances will be there. Okay. So there's that part of it. I know before you asked about, you know, how to accelerate your business, I hit one way to do that. What other questions for accelerating? Because I know you're working on that mode.
Yeah, the big question I have is, let's say, hypothetically, a friend of mine brings me a deal tomorrow.
Okay.
What's my next step? Is it to go to a title company? Is it to call you?
Call me first. Okay. So when the first time you look at a deal, so when you do your purchase agreement for a deal, it says it's subject to clear title. So the first thing you want to do is make sure, start working on the deal. Make sure the deal itself makes sense as it's presented to you. Hey, I have this house, here it is, you can walk through, look at your numbers, make sure it makes sense. Then you can reach out to me as a lender and say, okay, I've got this deal, here's where it is, here's what I know, here's some pictures, does it make sense? And we go like this. All right, then we're going to have you get, if you're not in our system already, we'll have you start a new application. If you're in our system, you just start a new loan. Because we save all your information. We save your driver's license. We save your operating agreement. We save all those things. Once we have them once, I don't need them again. Don't clutter up my stuff. Okay, just tell me, give me the things that are new. So I want your driver's license about once every 4 years. Okay? Once we have the application coming in, you've got that signed purchase agreement, we're going to ask you, okay, do you have a preferred title company? Oh, that one? No, you can't use that one. Let's use a different one. There's a couple that suck. And we get the title company going. Then we're going to send our request over to the title company. Says, hey, we're the lender. Here's what we need. Oh, by the way, I'm not sure. I haven't caught your name yet.
Chase.
So, by the way, Chase may have already sent you the purchase agreement. If he hasn't, let us know. We'll forward it over to you for you. Okay? So it, and that way you're working with a title company, we're working with a title company, you can get them started, we're telling them what our requirements are. Hey, we need lender's title, we need this, check this, this, make sure there's no outstanding water bills. Yeah, we tell them that for you, especially in Ohio. And we're going to start that process there. Same thing with insurance. You're going to have to call your insurance agent and say, hey, Bill, I need insurance on this property. Here's the address. And you're going to tell me, hey, I've got, you know, Bill Palti for insurance. I say, great, I have his email already. Hey, Bill, I'm doing this mortgage for Chase. Here's my requirements. Bill replies, I know your requirements. Just tell me you're doing it. Well, again, it's, we're all on the Friday calls, the haves and wants. You know, we all work together. We all work with each other. And Bill's set up out here. He's got a table going. And I like Bill because he's an engineer, and he took engineering to insurance. He knows a lot. Okay? Now, he's not the only insurance agent out there, and there's other good insurance agents. And I'm okay with that. Just be careful of, like, the State Farms and Allstates are not good insurance agents for you in most cases.
The note of kind of fast tracking thing, as new investors, I think there's just this mindset of we need all of these things together. We need to be able to present this. Have you ever had anybody just go over and above and you're like, I didn't need all this, you wasted your time, you could have been going faster?
Yes. So I get some people who've mostly because they've gone to a course that says, here's how to get private lenders. And they put together this very nice, pretty package of, you know, 27 pages of, here are my hopes and dreams, but I really haven't done anything yet. Actually, I have a slide on my application that says, tell me what you've done as an investor and where are you going, so I can help guide people. So, yeah, some of them have gone over and above, and some of them have really good packages to say, hey, here's the last five properties I rehabbed. Here's the before picture. Here's the after picture. Here's what we bought it for. Here's what we put into it. Here's what we sold it for. Those things like that, when they've got some experience, they bring that in, that's really, really helpful. Getting some background information that says, hey, I've been a project manager for the city for 20 years. Yes, this is my first deal, but I've overseen a lot of city projects. Okay, you're about to get a little bit of education because it's a little different, but at least you're a little ahead of the game. You've got a clue already. Okay, so yeah, those things come through. I'm a very casual, informal guy, so I want to talk to you. Send me kind of a summary of where you are, what you are, what you're doing, where you're going, so I can help guide you and set things up. So I don't want to do a loan for you now that screws up what you want to do in 3 months. Okay? So we want to watch out for those kind of things. Dan, you had a question.
Yeah, so privacy topics. Are you guys regulated at all? Stuff private. I know you got to do it for good business practices.
I'm in the don't be stupid zone. So there's the business laws that cover privacy. So we keep, you know, social security numbers behind passwords. I don't keep them on my local computer. They're on a server that somebody else takes care of, and they've got all the security protocols. Because frankly, I couldn't keep up with them. I mean, I can't keep up with my simple WordPress website, okay, let alone trying to keep track of all that security stuff. So we've got a server that we have a license to, and we use their software, and they take care of all those security things for us. So they have the ACH info, you know, account info saved there. They have the Social Security info is saved there. So we do it that way. That way it's not in our space. So the nice thing is about being a lender in Ohio for real estate investors is it is totally and thoroughly unregulated. So to lend to, like, Torrance's personal property that he lives in, that's an NMLS license. There's all kinds of federal rules, laws, regulations, and things you have to follow. Lending to a real estate investor in Ohio is a business transaction. They expect business owners to be smart enough to look out for their own interest. They think consumers are stupid. So it's different. You know, so I look at it, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to look out for your interest, too, to a certain degree. But I'm not you. I can't be you. Okay? I'm just here to help. I think you had a question over here.
So I was going to ask, with respect to if you don't have a deal yet, would it be make sense to go ahead and submit an application and get vetted with you?
Yes.
So you have some sort of a start of a relationship?
Yeah, so if you don't have a deal yet, you can get into our system. So if you go into our system and put my property address is still looking, or I need a pre-approval letter, or something like that. I can go through, I can vet you as a borrower, we can take care, if you got an LLC, we can get, make sure your LLC is all set up correctly, and I can look at you as a borrower and say, oh, you have X dollars in cash. Your strategy is this. You should look for things like this, and you should look for things that are in this price range with this level of rehab. And if you're brand new, that's going to be extraordinarily helpful to give you a target. If you're experienced, I'm going to look at it like, okay, yep, you've got money, you have a clue, yeah, go find a deal. But now we have your personal vetting done and your LLC done. Now when you go find that deal, all we have to do is analyze the deal and it speeds things up. So yes, that is helpful. And once we have your financials in, it also allows you to, us to give you a pre-approval letter, because I won't give a pre-approval letter without your financials. And then you can use that, if you, especially if you're dealing with real estate agents and the MLS, you hand that to them, here you go, I'm pre-approved. Some wholesalers will also ask for that pre-approval letter. And also so will some other, you know, private sellers who know, that, you know, have a clue. The last pre-approval letter was I sent the seller a text that says, I'm doing this one. It's a small world, you know, half of us know each other.
Happen to realize, hey, that's
yeah.
Real estate too.
Yeah, it's always strange when Steve feels like, oh, what are you doing here? Hey, Kristen.
Hey, Darren. Do you mind if I just give a little endorsement?
Sure. Would you like a microphone? I have one of those. All right, well, we'll let you endorse in a second, and let's see if there's another question while I find a mic. So, by the way, Kristen is a long-term lender. Her specialty is DSCR loans. She also qualifies under that realm of what I call has a clue.
Thank you. and I will endorse back with that glowing
recognition. I gave you a mic. You have to use the mic.
Okay. So I'm Chris Fleming with KFP Investors. Our table is just right outside this door. And Darren is absolutely correct. We primarily do long-term fixed-rate financing. So if you've got a BRRRR, we want to refinance you out of your Dayton Capital loan. But I want to say that we also do hard money loans. And when people come to us and they have the property, a property in Ohio, I always ask, did you call Darren yet? Because he's going to be cheaper on a hard money loan than I am. He's going to save you money and he's going to do a great job for you. So check with Darren first. So even though in that way we are direct competition, I know he does a great job with it. I will also say that I like to invest in real estate with my own money. I do not like to fix and flip. I do not like to landlord, but I like to JV with other people in their property. When Darren is doing a deal, I will make an offer on it just because it's Darren, because I know he's going to do a great job with it and I can trust him. My endorsement.
Well, thank you, Kristen. I'll pay you later. All right, so is this helping you guys out?
Yes.
Okay. So, and that's one of the reasons I leave that a lot of time for Q&A, because I never know what's on your mind. Okay? And I didn't know Kristen was going to do that either. We've sent some deals back and forth and hang out on Fridays a lot. Okay, so what are the questions you guys have?
Okay, so what did you need for financials again?
And it's short questions. All right, so for financials, mine's fairly simple. I want you to give me your most recent tax return. If you have an LLC, your most recent three LLC bank statements and your most recent three personal bank statements. That's it. The only time I'll ask for more on the financials is if I'm not seeing down payment money or cash reserves there, show me the money. Where is it? So I might have someone, last guy gave me his TD Ameritrade account. So he's got money in the money market and stock, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to pull the down payment from here. Oh, okay. That's fine. That makes sense. So that's what I'm looking for. Does it make sense? Is it logical? Other ones that have, things that I look closely at is if you're JVing with somebody. So if, Chase, if you and Dan are going to go together on a deal, you found the deal and Dan's bringing all the money, you're both signing on the note. I'm still background checking him. I'm still going to get a loan from him. Even though he's doing nothing but provide the money, you're doing all the work. You're both in the deal together. And frankly, I don't care if you did it through a joint LLC or if you're just in a JV agreement. You guys are working together. You're together. You're both in it together. I'm going to tie you together until the deal's done. Some of the deals that I've had that did go bad involved two of the three I've had. So I've had to take back three properties out of 600 in the last 6 or 7 years. So I'm getting pretty good at vetting people. And of two of those, thank you, Lydia. And of two of those, it was the same borrower, but they were getting down payment money from other people. And then they would go look for property. So even though I got three bank statements from them, they'd had the money so long that it didn't show up. It just showed as existing there. And then what I ended up with were people who were running projects, and they had no skin in the game. And when it got hard, they quit. And I had to take the properties back.
I just want to thank Joe and the company for giving me a pre-approval letter. I used that to buy my first two properties a year and a half ago.
Outstanding. Success.
I was new.
Right. And we'll work with you when you're new. We're happy to work with you. All right? You don't get to your 10th deal if you don't get through your first deal. Okay? And I remember doing the first deal. I was scared crapless. And the second deal and the third deal. So he gets there. All right, what other kind of questions you have? I'll pick on my bourbon guy over here.
I don't have one right now.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Generally, if credit and everything looks good, but liquidity was lacking, how do you feel about using HELOC money?
HELOC is fine as long as it's yours. I have several people that do that. They have, for most of them, it's either their personal residence with the HELOC. For a few, they have a rental property with the HELOC. And they regularly use that for down payment money because that way they're keeping their money going. I've also got one person that has a rental property that we have a second mortgage on the rental property. LTV is still really good. And she's told me, don't release the mortgage. Yes, I paid you off. I'm going to borrow it again for the next deal. And so now she's done the same. We've used the same mortgage for four notes, for four down payments. So she kind of treats it like a HELOC, but she knows she can only use it with me and only for down payment money. So that was something we did for her. And then someday she's going to tell me, all right, release the mortgage. Or if she doesn't use it for 6 or 8 months or something, I'll call, hey, you still need this or not? Like, no, I got enough money. Okay, I'll release it.
Do you loan to special projects like assisted living?
I will look at those, but those fall under my one-off category. So when I'm, like, assisted living, campgrounds have come up recently. Those are kind of one-offs. I look closely at those, so it's not a no. It starts off as a maybe. I'm probably going to look for more experience, more money down, other things like that. It's just, I understand residential, apartments, small commercial. I'm really good at those. Residential assisted living, if it's like a small house that you're just doing like, six people in or something like that, that's probably doable. If you're doing a multi-million dollar project for, 54 residents or something, you should probably be talking to the bank and not me anyway. All right? Makes sense? And that was... Yes. Colleen.
Can you explain how you do cross-collateralization?
Cross-collateralization.
Thank you.
So there's two ways to cross-collateralize something, which simply means we're putting more than one property on the same loan. That's all it is.
That's not what I thought. Okay.
So, I'm buying this property. I want to rehab. I have this property as a free and clear rental. I want to use that for my down payment instead of cash. Great. Let's do that. We'll just do a mortgage. We'll call out both properties. It's on there. When you pay this one off, because you're going to sell it retail in this case, then it pays off this one too. You go right back to having a free and clear property. Then you can keep your cash in your checking account, and then you have liquidity. You can pay contractors. You can do this and take care of all of that. And it's a short-term loan that way.
So we can't use our private residence as a collateral?
Your primary residence I cannot touch. It's a no-touchy zone. Just like girlfriends.
So could you use your primary if you have a HELOC?
Yes. I simply can't lend money on your primary. That's the difference. So you can use a HELOC off your primary because I didn't do that loan. You're just pulling cash from somebody else's loan. But even though you've got your primary, it's got a killer good 2.5% interest rate and you don't want to touch it, I can't touch it either. So that's where if you want to use it intermittently, you go to a traditional lender, you get a HELOC on it. If you want that money because you can use it all the time, you just go get a small second on it. But don't mess up that really low interest rate. Okay, you want to keep that out there as much as possible.
So in advance of finding a deal, will you set up like a line of credit with another property I have that has plenty of equity?
I wouldn't set it up ahead of time. We would just do it simultaneously when you find the deal. Okay. But what I can do is look at that property. So, I'm sorry, what he asked was, can we get my property, existing property, pre-approved as a line of credit for another deal I want to buy? So I wouldn't close that ahead of time. What I would do is look at the property with you, say, okay, based on what I see, this property is worth 200, you owe 100, you can tap 40,000 in equity out of that for a down payment for a deal you want to buy. And then you'll know that ahead of time. And then when we go and actually you find a deal and we actually are ready to close, that's when we'll tie it in at that point in time. There's no point in doing all the work and paying for closing everything out ahead of time until you actually have a deal and you have, you know, put something in there. Because it doesn't take any longer to do that. So it doesn't slow the process down at all. Yes?
So I know that when we first started trying to learn about everything, there's a lot of faces, there's a lot of names, there's a lot of opportunities if you find a great deal. How do people go about vetting those potential JV partners, things like that? Are you a good person to come to and say, hey, what's your experience?
Sometimes. Listen to the reputations around the RIA. The problem with reputations around the REIA is you never know if they're right or wrong. I got a partner once that after I did a deal with them and lost money with them, three people came up, oh, we knew you were bad. Well, why didn't you tell me ahead of time? Well, we didn't want to talk bad about them. Thanks. So now I've lost money to them too. Now we're all in the same boat. You feel better? Okay. Honestly, the biggest thing to do is when you're looking at someone like that, depends on the structure of your JV. If it's not really like a JV, it's just a wholesale deal, I mean, you're not really worried about that. But if you're doing some kind of other JV, I mean, sometimes it's simple. Go to the county court records and pull up their name. It's amazing what you can find just right there. The other thing you can do is if they've been around for a little bit, it's not like their first deal also. Oh, who else have you done a deal with? Oh, Danny, yeah, you want me to do a deal with you? Great. Who else have you done a deal with? Oh, I did this one with Chase a while ago. Oh, great. Thanks. Appreciate that. And Chase, I have Chase's number. Hey, Chase, you remember Danny? How'd that deal go? Oh, she promised to do everything and didn't do anything. Oh, okay. Thanks. Appreciate that. Actually, honestly, that's the most common thing I hear in JV deals going wrong is the two people, either they didn't quantify and write down what each person was responsible for, or, like the example I had earlier, Dan was bringing the money, Chase was doing all the work, and Chase got distracted by this other shiny squirrel over here and lost track of this project, and all of a sudden Dan's doing all the work, and he just wanted to be the ender and just make a little money while Chase was doing all the work. That's one of the most common things I run into that going bad. The same people that faked out with the down payment money earlier, one of their down payment partners had to step in and take over the deals that he had money in through them and fix them and finish them and get them refinanced. And because he was trying to fix the deal where he was in that situation where he was just trying to be the cash partner, we extended his loan out a couple times, we helped him through and kind of helped him get out of the mess that he unintendedly ended up in. So fortunately he paid it all off, which is good. Okay, so we've got about 7 or 8 minutes left. So time for a couple more questions. It's not like school, you don't get to get out early.
I know you had a podcast on this, so I could check that out. But would you be interested in saying anything about when you went from just being an investor to, you had one slide that said like you were loaning some people out money, but then you went.
Yeah, so Christine and I, so if you listen to the podcast, it's not a podcast I host. I was a guest on it, okay? And it talks a little bit about my background, the up, the down, and crash, and the climb back up again, and things I learned along the way. So Christine and I both started somewhere below zero with our net worth, and we busted butt for 5 years by doing wholesale deals and marketing and rehabs and pulling wire in attics and trash outs and demos, and gradually getting to where we could hire other people to do that. What happened was we finally got to the point where, like, okay, we've built a rental portfolio that covers the bills. Why are we still busting butt out here working on 8 projects in 8 different directions from where we live and working 16 hours a day? So I immediately sold two properties that were the furthest away from where I lived to other investors, and I funded the deal for them. And it's like, well, that worked out. And so as we wound down the act of rehabbing to the point where we're doing a rehab now, it's just for a rental property we're going to keep, I started doing a little more private lending. And it was very much like what you see in the back of the reel a lot of times. Oh, you need some money? Well, I got a little money. Oh, it's a good project? Yeah, here we go. I'll lend it to you. Congratulations. Slightly better than that, but not much. We at least did paperwork. Okay? And I found out really quickly that in order to get paid back, you had to have some level of qualification on the deal and the person and the project. So just like the first few rental properties that I bought, they generally sucked because I didn't know what I was doing. The first few private money loans I did generally sucked because I didn't know what I was doing. Once I figured out what I was doing, and the biggest shift in standard that I did was I went from, oh, the project looks good, I'll lend you most of the money, to, no, you will have 20% down on that purchase price no matter what, period. When COVID happened, I changed it to 25, and I've left it there. And just that one change made a huge difference. And that's where I kind of delineate, this is where I went from being a private money lender to a hard money lender, or a private money lender with standards. Was because I implemented, that was the big one. I implemented some other things too, as far as getting a full application, doing the background checks, credit checks, and just starting to act like a lender instead of just the guy next door that can lend you a little bit of money. So that's kind of where I call the break point from being private lender to hard money lender. Okay? So Lydia says, I have time for one question. Now, keep in mind, you guys can, you know, beat me up with questions down on the corner all day long.
That's why we don't have a ton of questions now.
Well, I know. That's because I know half a dozen people I've talked to today aren't here because I already answered all their questions already out there.
You just called Jared on the phone at all hours.
Yes. At least one of them brought me bourbon, though.
Hey.
Hey, Jared, just the preparation. So I'll use your service in the future. Can I get on your website today? It sounds like I can go ahead and start the process. So one of the things I've been doing is protecting my credit rating. So when I'm on your website, are you immediately going to get my credit report? Or will you hold off until it's like, okay, now I'm ready, like 9 months later?
All right, so here's the question is, if I do an application now, are you going to pull my credit right away? The answer is no, because that's stupid. So what I've got in my application is there's actually a spot where you can upload your own credit report. Or if you've got like a credit score from like your Discover card or Chase, whatever, that shows a score, just to give me a clue to where you're at. Okay, yeah, look, you know, Discover says I have a 721 credit score. Great, fantastic. We're not going to worry about credit. Now, if you have concerns, I might tell you, hey, go to Credit Karma, pull a report down, or get one of your free government reports, because you're doing something now, but you're not doing a loan till later. And let's see if we can work through some of those things first and see where you're really at. But no, I'm not going to pull the credit report when we're actually, you have a deal, everything looks good, then I'm going to pull it. But I want that initial input from you, because when I'm pulling it, I'm just validating what you told me is true. Don't lie to me. And so far, it's generally a couple of surprises here and there for people. Most people, you know, they're pretty good. It's like, yeah, my credit's okay, it's mediocre, I don't know what the score is, but you know, I make my payments on time. Okay, I can work with that. And I pull a credit score, it might be 620, it might be 720. One person was shocked because theirs was like 830. It's like, how'd that happen? well, you've been paying your bills on time for 20 years, you have very little debt, and you pay your mortgage and your truck payment, and they love you. Okay? You doing your refi for your rental property would be no problem whatever. They will line up to lend you money. And Kristen will be right there in the front of the line, too. All right? So, that's the wrap. Lydia told me so. If you've got questions, I will be here. Rod back there will be out at the table. Joe might hang out at the table for a little bit. He still likes the classes, too. Hit me up with questions. Ask me. I'll answer anything you have. And thanks for coming out. We appreciate it.